I bless and praise thy matchless might, when thousands thou hast left in night, that I am here afore thy sight for gifts and grace, a burning and a shining light to awe this place. Yet I am here a chosen sample to show thy grace is great and ample. I'm here a pillar of thy temple, strong as a rock, a guide, a buckler, and example to awe thy flock. O Lord, thou kens what zeal I bear when drinkers drink and swearers swear, and singing here and dancing there with great and small, for I am keepit by thy fear, free for them all. Lord, mind Gavin Hamilton's deserts. He drinks and swears and plays at kirts, yet he has sae money takin' erts wi' great and small. Frae God's ain priest to the people's hurts, he steals a law. And when we chastened him, therefore, thou kens how he bred sic a splore and set the world in a roar o' laughing at us. Curse thou his basket and his store, kale and potatoes. You recognize these verses. They come from the supplications of the prayer by Willie Fisher, the Holy Willie of Burns Poem. Willie Fisher was an elder in the parish of Mochlin in Ayrshire. He would spy on people and report them to the minister if he thought they were doing any wrong. He was better than CCTV. The poem is a satire based on Fisher's sickly self-righteousness, and the phrase Holy Willie is even to this day used to describe someone who is humorless and ultra-religious. The poem itself is not anti-religion. It is rather a condemnation of religious hypocrisy and self-righteousness. In Jesus' time, the Pharisees were the Holy Willies. Where Burns composed a poem, Jesus composed a parable directed at those who were self-righteous and regarded others with contempt. Although there must have been likable Pharisees around, the impression we can get from the Gospels that as a group, Pharisees were an undifferentiated bunch of legal nitpickers who, with a good conceit of themselves, would look down on others with disdainful contempt. They were the Puritans of the New Testament times. The word Pharisee literally means the separated one. They believed that to please God, they had to follow to the letter all the requirements of the Jewish ritual law. Originally, this seems to have been done with well-meaning intention of upholding the uniqueness of the Jewish faith in the face of encroaching Greek idolatry. But by the time of Jesus, many Pharisees had apparently set themselves apart and imagined themselves as surpassing others in piety. To have dealings with those they considered beneath them would make them unclean by association and therefore made them unable to take part in the temple and the other worship. And so to maintain their purity, they separated themselves from others who might taint them. Because of this, they effectively built a divide between themselves and others. Thus, they made themselves the separated ones. And so in Jesus' parable that we just heard, the Pharisee is actually described as standing on his own, standing by himself. The Pharisees held in greatest contempt their fellow Jews who were tax or toll collectors, counting them as amongst the worst of all sinners. They collected taxes and tolls from other Jews on behalf of the occupying Roman authorities. Each of these would have a franchise and work a particular geographical area. The franchise would cost a certain amount, which had to be paid to the Romans. Anything above that went to the tax collector's own pocket. Now, they weren't the only Jews who worked with the occupying Roman authorities, but because of their job, they were more in the public eye, and some had the reputation, of course, of lining their own pockets. There were all kinds of taxes, poll taxes, land taxes, income taxes, in addition to customs charges and toll charges on roads and bridges. A tax collector could stop a traveller almost anywhere and search through his baggage and merchandise and demand tax on this and that article he was carrying. At that time, news of changes in tax rates could take weeks to reach certain areas, so that most people probably didn't know what the correct current rate was, so couldn't argue with the tax collector when he said, "This is what you owe." So you can understand that tax collectors, as a professional group, were not held in the highest regard. At best, they were seen as collaborators and crooks, at worst, as traitors. But there must have been good, honest tax collectors who didn't cheat, as well as sincere and humble Pharisees who didn't look down on and criticize others. But in the telling of the gospel, they both acquire a kind of shorthand symbolism that helps to get the message across. And it's this shorthanded symbolism that Jesus uses in this parable of the Pharisee and the tax collector. He sets up these two arch stereotypes against each other, the pious, self-righteous Pharisee, the contemptible tax collector. In his prayer, the Pharisee justifies himself before God, telling God how well disciplined he is in his religious obligations and how upright and moral he is, comparing himself favorably with the tax collector, whom he associates with thieves, rogues, and adulterers. Aye, I may be bad, but I'm not that bad. So unworthy does he feel that the tax collector cannot even bring himself to look upwards, the normal disposition for prayer, but instead beats his breast while saying, "God, be merciful to me, a sinner," echoing in some measure the words that we heard from the Psalms a few moments ago. "My heart throbs, my strength fails me. As for the light of my eyes, it also has gone from me. But it is for you, O Lord, that I wait. It is you, O Lord, my God, who will answer. For I am ready to fall, and my pain is ever with me. I confess my iniquity. I am sorry for my sin." And it is, says Jesus, the tax collector who goes home justified, seen by God as righteous, right with God, not the Pharisee. The Pharisee is humbled, the tax collector exalted. Are we comfortable with that? We might be more comfortable if we were to assume that, having been justified by the tenor of his prayer, the tax collector went off and changed his ways and returned the following week and made the speech of the Pharisee. But that would be a wrong assumption to make from this parable, because it concludes with Jesus saying, "All who exalt themselves will be humbled, and all who humble themselves will be exalted." It is directed at those who think they are better than others, either because they are more moral or more religious. I wonder which of the two characters in the parable you would identify with. It's all right, I'm not going to ask you to put your hands up. It's the sort of question that might be posed in a small discussion group. I heard once of a minister who was visiting a rural church in the state of Victoria in Australia to conduct evening worship. It was a very small congregation. He describes them as carrying big black Bibles and severe expressions. Because it was such a small group, he decided to engage them in dialogue. "Who knows who the Pharisees were?" Well, they knew, because they'd read their Bibles. And they told him that they got a pretty bad press in the Gospels. "Okay," he said, "let's see if we can get them a better reputation. Tell me all the good things you can think of about the Pharisees." Well, they began calling out, and he wrote each good thing on a blackboard. They knew their Bibles, Disciplined in prayer, Fasted twice a week, Gave about a fixed sum of their income to the church, They were moral, very moral. They attended church regularly. They were evangelical, orthodox, evangelistic. The list complete. A troubled silence descended on the group. Puzzled, The visiting minister asked a man sitting in the front, "What's wrong?" The man pointed at the list and says, "That's us." So the minister asked another question. "What's so wrong with this list of seemingly admirable qualities?" The short answer was that it omitted what was most important in Jesus' message. Whenever he began a statement by saying, "This is the greatest or most important thing of all," it was never followed by any of these. Instead, it was such things as loving God, loving your neighbor, seeking first the kingdom of God, justice, love, mercy, and faith. Yet why is it that the Pharisee in us might still want to send the tax collector away with the Pharisee's speech in his pocket so that he can deliver it himself when he comes back the next week, having acquired a new respectability? The answer is that we do not believe that the love of God is so great that it can embrace everyone, whatever their condition or circumstances, their respectability or their moral status. The parable challenges that misbelief. Because, you see, this parable, like so many others Jesus told, is to help us understand the nature of God. In a number of his parables, Jesus sets up contrast between the reliable elder son and the prodigal younger one, between the pleading widow and the unjust judge that we heard about last week, between the forgiving and the unforgiving servant. He does so not to suggest that we should try to emulate one rather than the other, but to point to God, to the nature of God, to the love of God that is generous and without favor, unconditional without limit, undeserved but poured out indiscriminately. We cannot earn this love, no matter how righteous or moral or religious we think we are. It is given free to all. And all we have to do is affirm it, accept it, live it, and celebrate it, especially in church. In our human logic and human sense of justice, God has to be a punisher. God has to be a judge. God has to be a respectable God. God has to do all the things that enforce morality, our sense of morality, that is. And I'm afraid it is that joyous Pharisaic image that the church has so often presented to the world that has put generations of people off. The church is seen as separated from and looking down on people, judging them, condemning them, finding them unworthy, making them feel unwelcome. Yet on the cross in Jesus, God drops dead to the whole subject of sin and shuts up about the whole subject of condemnation. "Father, forgive them." Not angry cries of condemnation and punishment, no curse on his fellow countrymen and the Romans, not even on their kale and potatoes. But instead, "Father, forgive them." And more than that, "Today you will be with me in paradise." The parable of the tax collector and the Pharisee contrasts humility and pride. It says it was aimed at those who were sure of their own goodness. And so it warns us not to be proud and not to look down on others. Because behind it is the message that however righteous, moral, upright, or ethically pure we may think ourselves, none of us measures up, because no measure is set up. No measure is set up by God above which we are acceptable and below which we are not. If we think that either religion or moral rectitude are ways of climbing a ladder to God, then we'll never make it. If we get past stage one, we'll probably fall at stage two, and so on. F.B. Meyer wrote this: "I used to think that God's gifts were on shelves, one above the other, and that the taller we grew as Christian character, the more easily we could reach them. I now find that God's gifts are on shelves, one beneath the other, and that it is not a question of growing taller, but of stooping lower. Christianity is not about ascending to God up either a devotional or ethical ladder, but about dealing with a God who has descended to our level, the Word made flesh dwelling among us. Both prayer and any attempts at moral rectitude can only be responses to that love. They are responses to a lover God who takes initiative in love. We love because God first loved us. The Word made flesh dwelling among us, dwelling in and around us, in ourselves as well as in those with whom we share our lives within family and community. No man is an island. To realize that, we need that love and cannot live life without its true, and when we realize we cannot live life without it, that's when we find true humility. It is also how we experience and live with the grace of God. It is also, it seems to me, the way towards making this life more bearable, more tolerable, and more peaceable for more and more people. Amen. Thanks be to God.